Thanks, Susan. Have fun, youth. Have you ever worked so hard on a project that you forgot who or what it was for? This has definitely happened to me a couple times, and I've been involved in some pretty amazing, like, different projects over my lifetime and had the opportunity to work with some really incredible teams. But I think sometimes it can be easy to get kind of caught up in the work that you're doing or, the details of it, and in the process end up actually doing the opposite of what you were trying to do the project for. One example of this for me was we were taking a bunch of high schoolers. This is when I was in youth ministry, and we were taking a bunch of high schoolers on a mission trip, and so we did this training camp. And at the training camp, we were trying to get the students to understand in a, you know, safe, controlled environment, what people around the world might experience. Some of them not always having food available all the time, or being up late or experiencing stressful situations. Well, it kind of became a joke at one point, but one thing that you might not know about me is that sometimes when I get hungry, I kind of lose my mind. I get a little hangry, and it's an area that God is growing me in my life, all right? But my job at this retreat was to demonstrate to the students how to be, you know, in control and have a positive attitude and a good outlook when you're hungry and you're tired and you're kind of stressed out and you're, you know, still serving. Tired, no problem. Stressed out, got it covered. Hangry, not so much. All right, so we were at this retreat, and I remember there's this one particular student that just drove me nuts. And I'm a pretty even-keeled kind of guy. Like, I don't really get riled up very often. And this was probably the only time in about 8 or 9 years of youth ministry where I wanted to strangle a student. No, I didn't. Okay, for the record, no one was harmed at all. I did not harm them. I just wanted to, okay? So all of you judging me right now, if you're a parent, yeah, I don't want to hear it, okay? All right, so at this retreat, it was lunchtime, and I said, like, everything, you know, like, we need to be on time for the things that we're doing. And so I went to go gather the group. They were out, like, playing, I don't know, soccer or ultimate frisbee or something like that. And I'm like, guys, like, get over here. We got to, like, you're supposed to be down there. Like, lunch is ready. We need to get going. And I was like, I was pretty aggressive. And normally I wasn't. So it was like kind of a shock to everyone. And they, like, the crowd was kind of like, whoa, like, BJ's like really mad. Like, he's really upset. And one of the students that knew me probably better than most of the other ones, he just simply said, oh, don't worry about it. BJ's just hungry. And in that moment, I was like, oh, I'm so mad right now. Like, And so I was going to, like, actually give some of the students a ride back, and leaders were with them, and I didn't. I just walked away. I got in my car. I slammed the door, and I drove down to where we were having food, and I sat there, and I ate my food, and after about the second bite, I was like, man, he was totally right. You know, and, like, it just, all of the anger just melted away, and I realized, like, wow, I was totally unhinged because I was hungry. And I'm like, way to go demonstrating the whole point of the mission, right? Another time, we were building, like, these crazy sets for summer camp. And I was working with the leaders, right? And I'm supposed to, again, be demonstrating, like, hey, we're serving for all these children. It's great. And it was late at night. You know, we're working on this project. We're building these elaborate things. And then, and all my leaders knew this about me. So it wasn't too much of a surprise. And so we've been pushing through, you know, maybe a couple meals at this point, you know, munching on some snacks. But like, we've been working really hard. And I get to this point where I'm kind of snappy with the leaders. Like, hey, pick that up, and, you know, get over here and do this. And I'm kind of, and then Beth Clemens walks over, and she's like, hey, why don't you take a bite of this sandwich? And I'm just like, get that sandwich out of my face. Like, I'm not hungry. Like, we have work to do, you know. And then she kind of sets it down, and I walk over, and I'm like, you know. I take a couple bites, and then I had to call back, and I'm like, I'm sorry, guys. Like, I just derailed. I was hangry. And, you know, they all just laughed about it, luckily, because they knew. But that, just that moment of shame where I'm just sitting in the corner just, you know, eating my sandwich. Like, I'm not angry. I was angry. Over the years, I've been a part of some pretty incredible things and got the opportunity to work with some just amazingly brilliant people that have created some incredible things. And what I love about that is that there's value in a theme. There's value in an experience, right? Like, when you take the time to build something that impacts people, and we've done all kinds of stuff. you know, we've done like elaborate sets and productions. We've built, you know, like massive giant transformers, you know, and had them like breaking through the walls. And we've had, you know, whole cityscapes that were superheroes. And it's like 40 foot wide and like 20 feet tall, and built all these things and painted all these things. And it was such a blast to be a part of it. And it's so fun to not only do the project, but ultimately the reason why. Because every time, my favorite night, especially with summer camps when we would build a lot of these things, was the first night when they walked in, right? The moment they walked into the room and just their reaction, just, whoa, like I'm in a different world. This isn't just like one more thing that I have done before. It's a completely different experience. And I think one of the coolest places that does that is Disneyland. Right, you get it. If you've been to Disneyland or you've been to Disney World, right, you know that when you walk there, like when you walk into that place, there's something different, right? They call it the happiest place on earth, right? The magic of Disneyland. But what is it about it? Well, they've done a ton of work and a ton of research to make it like that. They know how far you will walk before you'll throw a piece of garbage on the ground, and so they put garbage cans every, like, so often, just so that you won't throw garbage on the ground. They actually had somebody research that. Like, the average person walks 23.6 feet, you know, and then throws garbage on the ground. And they're like, great, let's put garbage cans every 23.6 feet. I don't know if that's the actual number, but they actually do know. And it's crazy, right? The way that they've designed the castle so that you can see it from any point in the park. It's designed in such a way that it's at like three-quarter scale, and the top stories actually get smaller, so it works with perspective. All right, now here's the crazy thing. All right, if you think, oh, well, that's just, you know, good marketing, and which it is, but there is something more to it. There's something powerful about it, because there's something about Disneyland where everybody goes, like every family has this wrestle of like, man, at some point in my life, I'm supposed to take my kids to Disneyland. That's a box I'm supposed to check, right? That's just an experience they should have. Now, whether you've done it or you haven't done it, right, you've definitely thought about it. You went like, I got it, you know, that's just something every child should experience. They should go to Disneyland, all right? But why Disneyland? How come nobody ever says like, well, every child needs to experience Six Flags or Busch Gardens? Have you ever heard anyone say that? Never. Now, to be honest, I've been to Six Flags, Busch Gardens. Their rides are better. Like, just in just like a ride experience, they're better. But what is it about Disneyland? Right, because I can tell you, when I go to Six Flags and I sit, you know, in one of their restaurants and I pay $40 for a cheeseburger, I'm like, man, $40 for a cheeseburger, this is outrageous, right? But when I go to Disneyland and I'm sitting in this amazing atmosphere, I'm like, $40? This is great! Look at my cheeseburger's like a castle, you know, like something about it just changes your perspective. It's the magic of Disneyland, right? There's power in this incredible theme. Right, that moves people in this experience, and it's different than if you just walked into something and it didn't have that. It wasn't an experience. It was just you're walking through something. But if I'm honest, so there are times late at night or working on projects, and in the midst of the stress and the pressure, I got lost in the project, and I forgot why, right? Why I was doing things, and it's one of the reasons why I love Nehemiah chapter 7. And if you haven't been with us for a while, or maybe you're joining us for the first time, we're in a study in the book of Nehemiah, and we're at week 9, and we're looking specifically at chapter 7. And Nehemiah was a guy that God tasked with rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. And last week we talked about in chapter 6, they finished those walls. And so now what's Nehemiah doing? You know, what is he going to go back to to King Artaxerxes? Is he going to go back to the citadel of Susa? Or what happens next? And if you have a Bible with you, go ahead and open up to Nehemiah chapter 7. If you need one, raise your hand, we'll get one to you. I will put some of the verses up front here on the slides. A couple weeks ago, we went through Nehemiah chapter 3, and there was this long list of people that helped build the wall. Right, and I told you there's incredible value in knowing each and every one of those names. They were people that God wanted to record in his word. And that chapter was, I think, like 36 verses, all right? So Nehemiah chapter 7 is 73 verses, right? And it has this long list of people, and it's not necessarily only individuals, it's groups of people, it's families. It records the genealogy of those who were exiles
in that they were taken captive by the Babylonian Empire, and then now they've come back to the city of Jerusalem, and they want to record who are those people. And the great part about it is God thinks it's so important that he actually recorded this list twice. This list is taken almost exactly from Ezra. There's some discrepancies just because of time has gone by and people have died and new people have been married in and the family continues. But it's pretty much the same list, all right? So we read through every one of those names in chapter 3, and I want to try to read through all 73. Are you guys ready? Okay, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to. All right, so we're not going to read them, but the reason that I want to bring it up is I think there's value in it. It took me about 6 minutes to read the 36 verses, so I'm guessing it'd take me about 12 minutes to just read this, assuming I didn't stumble. And I don't think that's how God wants us to use our time this morning, so I'm not going to do that. But I do want to challenge you, read this list. Read this list on your own. Read the list in Ezra chapter 2. Like I said, it's a similar list because these are people that God cares about, and he wanted to record them in his word. And so they're important, and they matter. But what I want to do is I want to specifically focus on just the first five verses and then also kind of the overall reason of why would these names be in here. And so if you have your Bible, go ahead and open up to Nehemiah chapter 7, and I'm going to start in verse 1. I'm going to read through these five verses, and then we'll talk a little bit about them. All right, Nehemiah 7, verse 1. It says, "Now when the wall had been built, and I had set up the doors, and the gatekeepers, the singers, and the Levites had been appointed, I gave my brother Hanani and Hananiah, the governor of the castle, charge over Jerusalem, for he was a more faithful and God-fearing man than many. And I said to them, let not the gates of Jerusalem be opened until the sun is hot. And while they are still standing guard, let them shut and bar the doors. Appoint guards from among the inhabitants of Jerusalem, some at their guard posts and some in front of their own homes. The city was wide and large, but the people within it were few, and no houses had been rebuilt. Then my God put it into my heart to assemble the nobles and the officials and the people to be enrolled by genealogy. And I found the book of the genealogy of those who came up first, and I found written in it." And then they go on for basically verse 6 through 73, the list of all the names of these people. So some things to note that just kind of jump out to me immediately. It says once the wall had been built, the last thing they set up are basically the gates and the doors. It's just interesting to note that the whole point of a wall is to keep someone out, right? But the whole point of a gate is it allows people in, and it keeps things out, right? It's the last thing that they're put up. And then next, he appoints a gatekeeper, so people actually watching the gates, and then singers and Levites. Well, singers are the worshipers. They take the time to appoint singers, people actually singing, and then the Levites are the priests, because what's the point of rebuilding the wall? Is it just so they can have a great wall and everyone can stand around and say, hey, look at this great wall we did? No, the whole point of it was to worship God, was to have a place where the temple was safe and secure so God's people could worship him. And so that's what they do. They actually set up people, assign them, hey, your job is to sing praises. Your job is to be the priest and to work. Then he appoints Hanani and Hananiah, governor of the castle, charge over Jerusalem. So Hanani is a familiar name because in chapter 1, he's the one that actually came to Nehemiah when he was in the citadel of Susa in the Persian Empire and told Nehemiah that the walls were broken down. It's that same person. And so obviously that person cared about the condition of Israel, cared about the condition of Jerusalem specifically. And so Nehemiah goes, this is a person that I trust, that understands the reason for why we're here. And then Hananiah is basically kind of the captain of the guard at this point. And then as we keep going in verse 5, it says, then God put it in my heart to assemble the nobles and the officials and the people to be enrolled by genealogy. Right, so he finds this list that Ezra had made of all the exiles and then begins to basically do a census of all the people. Now, why is this important? Why is this important right after the wall's done? Why is it important to take this giant census of people? Well, think about it. They just built this entire wall around the city, and in these verses we read that there's no houses that are built. All they have is this giant temple and they have a giant wall around it, and there's no houses actually rebuilt within the city walls. Well, are they just going to let anyone come and move into the city that they just worked so hard to rebuild, especially knowing there's already a bunch of people that wanted to kill them in the process? Well, no. They want to figure out who are actually Israelites. Who are the people that God has called to come back here? Because God prophesied that he would bring back a remnant, that he would bring back his people to this promised land, to this promised place. Right? Now, what's interesting is of the people that of the Israelites that were taken into captivity and or killed by the Babylonian Empire, this group right here, which numbers around 42,000 people, only represents about 2%. 2% of the people came back. And God wants to record every one of them. And they matter and they're important. And I think what I love most about this chapter is this reminder that people are the reason for the projects. If we look at the whole of Scripture and you just pick any book and you start reading it, what you're going to find is, yeah, there's some cool things that happen and some big projects that happen, but almost always the story is about an individual or it's about a group of people that God uses to do something incredible. Right, but it's more about the people and about what God is doing. Even the book of Nehemiah, yeah, they rebuilt the wall, but this is a book about Nehemiah. It's about the people that were involved in the wall. Those are the names that are recorded, right? The wall's already done, and we still have 7 more chapters. It's not just about the wall. It's about the people. And it's a great reminder to us that when we do things, when we do these different projects or we have these programs with the goal of people, that ultimately people are the more important reason, right? And it's not that the project's not important, but I think how easy it is to get caught up in the project or the checklist and miss the people. I mean, think about it. If you're working on a, maybe you decide as a family, hey, we want to spend more time together as a family. We should go on some vacations. So you sign up for an outrageous amount of overtime so that you can go on that vacation to spend time with your family, right? There's a balance to be had. I'm not saying overtime is bad or saving for a vacation is bad, but there's always a balance to be had, and it's really easy, actually, to get caught up and miss it or to treat people poorly in the midst of your project because, you know, you get hangry or you're stressed out or, you know, how many people, you know, have been involved in a building project and in the process ended up hurting their relationships? I think it's so easy to get there. And the projects themselves or even programs are not bad. In this story that we've read, it took them 52 days to build this. This was a crunch, right? It says that we read that they were actually sleeping in their armor, right? And they did everything in their armor. They had weapons with them. They're like moving, you know, bricks while they're carrying their weapons. So this is a push. It's not a, oh, we're just leisurely rebuilding this wall. No, this is a time, and there are seasons in life where there are those, this is a push, right? And it's not that those are all inherently evil, but it's an important reminder to remember why and who are we doing this project for, and what are we doing? And we don't want to forget that reason that we're doing it. And I think it's so easy to do that, and I love that right after the wall is done, this is the first thing that God focuses on. Here's the list. God stirs in Nehemiah's heart to say, hey, let's remember the people. Let's remember the reason for what we're doing. As I was thinking through the lessons of this passage, it made me think about kind of what's coming up next and even some of the projects and the programs that we have coming up. And I think sometimes, even for myself, it can be easy to get caught up in a project or in a program. Just the other day, or actually this was yesterday, I was replacing the brakes in my wife's van. And I'm not like a big car, like auto mechanic person. I was watching YouTube videos and I was doing my best, right? And I tested it before my wife drove it. So I was like, all right, we can stop. We're good. So I think I did okay. But as I was doing this project, my neighbor came over. They were doing a little like, you know, sidewalk sale or something like that. My neighbor came over and started talking to me. Now, I got to be honest. When I was first talking to my neighbor, I was like, okay, I kind of like, I want to get this project done, and it, you know, it's kind of stressful, and I don't really know what I'm doing, and I want my wife to be able to come to church tomorrow, so I need to be able to finish this project, you know, and the whole time, you know, my neighbor's trying to talk to me, I was actually thinking about like, oh, I need to, you know, get this, and I'm trying to like pry something off and kind of facing this challenge. Well, then it occurred to me what I was preaching on, and it occurred to me like, wow, I've been praying for my neighbors for months. I've been praying for my neighbors for months. I've been praying specifically by name for my neighbor this week. And here is this opportunity right in front of me, and I'm missing it. I'm missing it because I'm so caught up in my project, right? I'm so caught up in the idea that, oh, I want to be able to get to church, and I want my wife to be able to get to church because church is important because we're trying to reach our neighbor. Oh, man, I messed up. Right? And all of a sudden, it's like God just opened up my heart, and I went, okay, I'm just going to stop for a second. I'm going to talk to my neighbor. And we had a great conversation. And, you know, was it this life-altering situation or this you know, life-altering conversation for them? I don't know. But I knew it was the very opportunity that I was praying for. It's the very reason that I come here on church, right? The mission that we have is to make disciples and to love our neighbors. Man, how inconvenient that is, right? It's so easy to forget that people are the reason for the projects. I've been sharing the last couple weeks about some of the projects that we have for the purpose of reaching out, for reaching our neighbors, for reaching out to different people. And some people have been telling me, hey, you know, I'm excited to be a part of what's going on, what the church is doing and this outreach, but I don't fully get it. I don't fully understand what it means. So I want to take an opportunity just to share a little bit of kind of the vision of why we're doing this, why we're trying to reach out, who are we trying to reach, and what does it look like? So first, we are starting with March 24th is a cleanup day. And we're going from 9 to noon, and then we're going to have lunch together. And Susan has agreed to make some soup, so we're going to have, you know, soup with Susan and just have a fun time hanging out. All right, the goal of this cleanup day, ultimately, is to put our best foot forward. When you invite somebody into your home, right, you clean up. You make sure that all your kids' boots are not right in front of the doorway where people will trip on, all right? That's the goal, right? It's we're going to invite a bunch of people into this building, to this campus. We want to clean up and make it look nice so that they walk in and they're not distracted by all these different things. They walk in and they can just experience, you know, what God has for them. So we're going to start on Saturday, March 24th from 9 to noon. We want to invite you to be a part of that. Then we're going to start Holy Week with Palm Sunday. It's going to be our normal services, 9 and 11. This is March 25th. And we're going to take a break from the Nehemiah series to focus on what is Palm Sunday. Why is it important? Palm Sunday represents the day where Jesus came back to Jerusalem and he was celebrated like a king. They were saying Hosanna and they were waving palm branches and the Israelites thought, oh, he's going to come and he's going to take over the Roman Empire and he's going to be king and we're going to be set free and everything's going to be great. Well, he did come to set them free, but not quite in the way that they thought. And as we know, the events of the next week changed pretty drastically. And then that week, he is actually crucified. But it all starts with Palm Sunday. And so we're going to take a break from this series and focus on that. Then on the Thursday is something we're calling the Upper Room. And the goal of this is for believers. This is for you and me. This is a time for us to say, hey, we want to be really intentional to pray. We want to pray that God would do something incredible, that he would draw people, that the people that we're inviting would be impacted. And this is a time for you and me to say, God, will you do something big here? And to remember, and this is the time where Jesus was in the upper room with his disciples, right before he was arrested in the crucifixion. This is a time where he's washing their feet and he's celebrating, having communion together. And so this will be a time for us to celebrate together, to pray and spend some time together, just worshiping and praying, that God would do something incredible and that we could be a part of that. Then on Friday, something called the Common Thread, and this is for Good Friday. And this is something I've talked a lot about, and I'll explain kind of some details, right? So it's an interactive Easter experience. It takes place on March 30th. It's from 6 to 8 p.m. And the goal of this isn't to be, it starts at 6. It's like more like an open house. You can come at any time, and it could take you anywhere from 10 to 30 minutes to go through the experience. It really depends on how fast people want to go through and what they want to experience. But I wanted to take a moment just to kind of explain what it is and kind of what the themes are. The idea is that we're going to use the entire campus, this building and that building and kind of some spaces in between, to give people an experience. So that when they walk in like Disneyland, I'm transformed into a different world. I see something differently than I would have expected, right? I don't want them to walk in and go, oh, this is just a church. They go, wow, this is really cool. This is something different that makes me think about things in a different way. It has a little bit of the historical context, but also has some really cool feel. And the idea is that you're engaging all these different senses that are going on. So let me tell you a little bit about kind of what that looks like. So it's starting next door in the fellowship hall is where you'll enter. And imagine walking into the upper room when Jesus is there with his disciples and they're all reclining because they wouldn't have had like, you know, chairs and tables like we do. They're all reclining and they're having their feast. This Passover feast is what they're celebrating. So imagine there's wine and whatever else they would have other than flatbread at their feast, all right? Maybe a lamb or something like that, I don't know. Whatever it would be for their Passover feast, that's what they're celebrating. And imagine walking in and what it would smell like, you know, what it would sound like, what it would look like, what the experience would be. And that sets the tone for what the experience would be. And then there, they'll see a short video that begins to explain this idea of a common thread. And the common thread is this, that from the beginning of creation, God cared about you, about people. And that there is a process of salvation, that he has a plan to redeem you back to himself, to have right relationship with himself. And that's the common thread that's going to be weaving throughout this whole thing. But the idea is that there they get this intro video and they get to understand the events that start from creation up to basically Good Friday, so they understand the context of the story. Then next, they'll move to the garden. Now imagine being there at the Garden of Gethsemane when Jesus is there and he's praying with his disciples. Imagine what it would smell like to be surrounded by the garden stuff. It's like maybe dusk or nighttime there, and maybe the disciples are sleeping. And understanding what that experience would be like, they get some of the historical context, some of the spiritual context of why that's important. Why does that time matter? What's Jesus' response? Then the arrest. You got to understand what that is and the significance of that and experience maybe what that would be like. Next is the praetorium. The praetorium is not a word that we use often in our language now, but basically the praetorium was the place that Pilate lived in. Imagine headquarters is kind of what it is. And this is where the trial would have taken place. And so now imagine you move to a different building and you walk in and it feels like Rome. Now, this is obviously still in Jerusalem, but the Praetorium was something built by the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire ruled over Israel at that time. And so imagine you walk in and you experience something. Wow, this feels like Rome. And then they get to be a part of the trial. So Pilate is standing before them, and the key part of the trial or the common thread of the trial is that Pilate says, hey, you know, I have the authority to give you life or to take it away. And Jesus' response is, no, I lay my life down. Right, Jesus is the one that made the decision to go to the cross. And it wasn't anything that Pilate did or didn't do. Right, that's the power of the gospel in that. And so imagine being there and hearing the sounds and people interacting with Pilate in that. Then the suffering. And the goal of this is, it is a family-friendly event, so we're not going to have like crazy things. It's not Passion of Christ. But we will have, you know, some of the different articles that were there. So for example, like a crown of thorns and like a whip and different things that you could actually look at and maybe even touch and even smell the vinegar that they would have given to him. And the idea is that you're transformed, right? You're transformed into a different environment. Like you're there, you get to experience it. Then the betrayal. Imagine being there, you know, around a campfire when Peter is denying Christ. You know, what that would have felt like, what that experience could be like. And then the crucifixion, ultimately the message of Jesus going to the cross and the significance of that. And then lastly, kind of ending here on the stage is the tomb. And the tomb is not empty yet. This is Good Friday. This is the day that Jesus gave him life. So the tomb is full. And then the last thing is the invite. So what they're going to do is they're going to walk through this experience and they'll end with the tomb here on stage. And they'll get to walk up and look and see this tomb that's full. And then what they're given is this invite back to Easter, because Easter is a resurrection day. That's not the story doesn't end with the tomb full. It ends with the tomb empty, and Jesus is raised from the dead, right? But that part of the story hasn't happened yet, and so they get to experience the story, and then what they'll receive is an invite back to Easter, and then they'll receive the gospel message. So whether they come to Easter or not, the point is we want people to understand the significance of the gospel in their life, but experience it in a way that maybe they never have. and experience something that's different, like walking into, you know, Disneyland. And I'm so excited to be a part of it because I know the creative team, you should hear some of the crazy dreams they have. It's mind-blowing, and I know the team is capable of some pretty incredible things. And so I'm excited to be a part of it, and it's something that I want to want to think through. Who are the people that I'm going to invite? What are their names? What are their faces? And what kind of reaction would they have if they came? Because ultimately, it's not just about the project, right? It's about those people. And I don't want to forget that in the midst of the process. And I don't want to have them come and be embarrassed because what I did was not offer my best. I want to offer my best, and I want it to be something that they're truly moved by. Then what happens next is the flip, all right? So this is March 31st. This is the next day. So we have our Good Friday event, then we've got Saturday, and then we've got Easter Sunday. So now imagine we've radically transformed this entire campus into this really elaborate set. We have all these things everywhere. Well, we still have to do service on Sunday morning, all right? So the idea behind this is, hey, we need your help. We need your help to flip it because we want them to come and be able to have the space and not have it be a construction zone or, you know, it's they're walking into something that's intentional. And then this is the fun part is the tomb stays. It's just open because that's what we're celebrating, right? They get to walk right in right where they finish the story and they get to pick it up on Sunday morning. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you come to church on Sunday, Easter Sunday, what you're going to hear is the gospel message. That's what you're going to hear. Because ultimately, that's the message that we've been called to give, right? And sometimes as believers, we might go, man, you know, is it always going to be the gospel message? Well, we should never get tired of hearing the good news. We should never get tired of sharing the good news. And the reality is, it's not for you. If you are a follower of Christ, the message is not for you. The message is we want people to understand the amazing freedom and salvation that we have through Jesus Christ and that that's available to every person. And that's the reason for the project that we're doing. And lastly, we celebrate Resurrection Sunday. Easter service on April 1st, and we'll have two services, 9 and 11. And the goal of this is to celebrate, to invite the community, but ultimately, people are the reason for the projects, right? This is a lot of work. Absolutely, it's a lot of work. I'm not going to deny that. And it's going to take a lot of hands to help make it happen. But I want it to be something that we go, wow, this is a great opportunity to reach those that maybe have never heard the gospel in a new way. And I know the people that I'm planning on inviting, I have people's specific names and faces that I'm planning on inviting, they won't come to a Sunday service. I know because I've invited them. Maybe they'll come to this. It's not a Sunday service. It's an opportunity for them to come and experience it. I hope they do because I'm building it for them. Right? That's the goal of it. As I think about this, and I think about my experience with my neighbors, I'm just reminded of the urgency of it. You know, why do we do all this work? So that we can reach the lost. And there's no time like now, because there's people all around us that don't know Jesus. And why are we set free? So that we can go tell other people. And the gospel is the good news. And so I hope that we feel that. I hope that we feel the urgency of that and that we can be a part of it. And I want to ask Susan to pass out some forms that we had made for you guys. And this is specifically about the Common Thread event. And it's just some different opportunities to be involved and serve in this process. Ultimately, if you are a follower of Jesus Christ, your existence is to go and make disciples. That's why we're here, is to reach our neighbors. So I hope that there's a specific name, a specific person that you're praying about inviting. And I want to invite you, come join us. Be involved. And maybe you're like, well, I am not a super creative genius. Right? I am not a super creative genius. I'm not. My wife is. I am not. But I will be the monkey that will help move things. I want to be involved in what God is doing. And the reality is, as we've been talking about with Nehemiah building the wall, there were a lot of people that were not masons building the wall. In fact, most of them probably weren't masons that were building the wall. And so there's a part that you can play, whether it's coming and praying, whether it's coming and doing some gardening, whether it's coming and greeting people, whether it's helping with some of the construction or working on some of these projects, or helping out you know, painting or whatever. My wife is really good at making like a paint by number thing. And so I really am going to like capitalize on that because I can do that much. So whatever it is, your gifts or talents that you have or don't have, I want to invite you, be a part of something, because I really believe that God wants to reach the people around here. In fact, I know it because he promises that. But I really believe this is an opportunity for us to reach those in our community in a unique way, in an exciting way. And I don't want to look back and go, man, that was incredible, and I wasn't a part of it. I want to be a part of what God is doing here in this community, and I want to remember why. And so for that particular packet, I want to encourage you, look through it. And whether there's a job on there that you like, this is totally the thing that I love, or maybe you want to write something in, it's not an exhaustive list, I want to encourage you, look it over. Fill it out. Find a way to get plugged in and serve and use your gifts to help reach the community. And you can just leave them on the back table there, and we'll contact you. I promise we'll contact you. We're going to try to find a job for everyone, because the goal is, let's mobilize the community to reach those that we love and that we care about. I'm going to invite the worship team up to come as we close. And I just want to pray that God would help us to be bold.